Your Honor, may it please the court, counsel. My name is Bob Plunkert. I represent the city of Ferguson, Thomas Jackson, and Darren Wilson. And I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of time, please. A temporary hesitation to flee from police near an altercation is not a seizure within the confines of the Fourth Amendment. The case law is consistent in that regard. And on August 9th of 2014, there was no clearly established law to the contrary. This is an appeal, Your Honors, from an order denying a motion to dismiss regarding issues, among others, and pertinent to today's inquiry, qualified immunity. The plaintiff is Dorian Johnson, who raised 4 counts at the district level. The most important, again, today is the 1983 cause of action against the defendants. There is an unlawful detention aspect, an excessive force aspect, and a failure to intervene aspect. As this court is familiar, the court reviews a denial of qualified immunity at the pleading stage de novo. However, this court will construe all reasonable inferences of fact in favor of the plaintiff. As this court knows from Ashcroft versus Iqbal, any legal conclusions need not be assumed to be true. If it pleases the court, I can go through a brief summary of the facts. And specifically, there are only a few facts, paragraphs in the complaint, which are pertinent today. On August 9th of 2014, plaintiff Dorian Johnson and Michael Brown were walking down Canfield Drive in Ferguson, Missouri. Again, when I restate these facts, we're not conceding them, we're admitting them. We're just saying this is what is alleged for the purposes. While operating in a marked police car, Darren Wilson slowed his vehicle to a stop and ordered the two, and if I may beg the pardon of the court, to quote, to get the fuck on the sidewalk. Darren Wilson continued to drive, but then put his car in reverse, parked his car at an angle, reached out, grabbed Michael Brown, according to Dorian Johnson, drew his firearm, shot Michael Brown twice, and immediately at that point, Dorian Johnson, quote-unquote, ran away. It is important for this court to note, and I'll quote the allegation.
Let me ask you, if I recall correctly, there's one other fact that before he shot Michael Brown, that he opened the door to the squad car?
Yes.
Where does that, how, if at all, does that play into the analysis?
Judge, I don't believe it plays into the analysis with respect to Dorian Johnson, and the allegation was that the door was opened into Michael Brown, assuming what Dorian Johnson says to be true.
Are you arguing that the fact that he was only there, that Mr. Johnson only remained momentarily, means it wasn't a seizure, or is that your main argument? Is because Johnson ran away, it wasn't a seizure?
Yeah, that's the main argument, Judge. And I would also state that the brevity of the interaction is not what the court would focus on under the Baldwin case out of the Second Circuit. It is, in fact, the nature of the interaction. And for the circumstances that are pleaded, the nature is insufficient to get around what the plaintiff's burden is to show a circumvention of qualified immunity.
You've lost me there.
Sure.
So are you saying the nature as the facts of the seizure by the police officer, or are you talking about the nature as the brief time that Johnson remained there and then ran away? I'm not sure I understand what you mean by nature.
Sure. In United States versus Baldwin, they discussed two officers that approached a vehicle from they pulled a vehicle pullover. The officers waited in the squad car for moments, got out, and started to approach. The individual in the car looked back. They instructed him to put his hands in the air. He failed to comply. They drew their firearms and they approached the car. And when they got up to the rear of the vehicle, I believe, the individual sped away. And so when that court said that it's not about the brevity or the duration, but more about the nature. In fact, the nature being, was there a submission to the authority? And the court found the car may have stopped, and it doesn't matter how long, but there's no real submission to the authority in any meaningful manner. There was no compliance with any order. So if that helps explain the nature that is explained in Baldwin. And one other fact that I'd like to call the court's attention, the allegation is, quote, at no point in time did Officer Wilson order Plaintiff Johnson or Brown to stop or freeze. So looking back at the allegations, you have, before the detention is alleged, a command to get on the sidewalk. That is not a command to freeze, and in fact, a reasonable person would believe they're free to actually go on the sidewalk and walk on the sidewalk instead of the road. But moreover, Officer Wilson did not command Dorian Johnson to stop. That's important. As this court knows, and I'll briefly state qualified immunity, it's immunity from suit, not just liability. And we are not to judge the officer's actions in hindsight, because hindsight's 20/20. And obviously, officers are entitled to the benefit of the doubt when there's not a clearly established law. This is what provides for the jurisdiction of this court on an interlocutory appeal. On the response brief, the plaintiffs or the appellee, discussed the reasonableness of the actions and whether the force was excessive. And I want to focus the court's attention that this is not about those issues. This is about whether a seizure took place. No seizure occurs, for example, in the Cole versus Bone case out of this court, if an officer discharges a firearm but does not strike a fleeing individual. That makes sense. If there's no physical touching, if there's no bullet striking them, there is no seizure and the suspect has fled. In California versus Hadari D, that is the seminal case which will guide this court and the sister courts that address the issue today. It is that a subject must actually yield for a seizure to occur. If no physical touching is present, Hadari D says, you have two elements to go through. There must be a sufficient showing of authority, but also a submission to it. And for purposes of this oral argument, I'd like to focus on the second of those two elements, unless the court has questions otherwise. As I've already discussed in Hodari D, Justice Scalia giving the opinion for the court, this dealt with a group of youths who were standing around. The officers approached. They ran. Drugs were discarded, and it was a motion to suppress. The quote from this case is, neither usage nor common law tradition makes an attempted seizure a seizure. Here, Dorian Johnson, according to his allegations, briefly or momentarily hesitated before the first discharge of the firearm, and he ran away. There was no submission to Darren Wilson. There was no compliance with any order of Darren Wilson. In fact, the only potential order was to get on the sidewalk. He didn't comply with that. He didn't allege that he was in the altercation whatsoever. The policy is extremely important that Justice Scalia wrote, quote, street pursuits always place the public at some risk, and compliance with police orders to stop, therefore, should be encouraged.
And that case, again, was what?
This is California versus Hodari
right,
D.
Right.
I've already gone through the facts of Baldwin. I'd note to the court that in the plaintiff's response, the appellee's response, they only cite, they just try to distinguish Baldwin. They do not attempt to distinguish any of the other cases that I cited in my brief, but most importantly, the case that they rely on is Brower versus Inyo County. Brower versus Inyo County dealt with a roadblock that the police put up and a vehicle evading pursuit for 20 miles before crashing into the roadblock. I believe the suspect was killed. That is a seizure, undoubtedly, at the point of the roadblock impact. But the court stated up until then, in the 20 miles that they were running, there was no seizure. Here, we don't have any meaningful stop. We don't have any action by the police that produced a stop that was submission to the authority. I would call attention to the court the cases of United States versus Waterman, where several individuals were standing on a porch. This is a Third Circuit case from 2009. The officers approached. The suspect in question was stopped. Eye contact was made. He did not comply with the command to get the hands in the air. Instead, after a while of, again, being stopped, facing, he had his hand on the doorknob, but someone came and opened the door from behind, slipped through the house, and the police officer put the foot in the door, and that was what was at issue. Was there a seizure at that time? The court says there's no submission to the authority there. The individual failed to put their hands in the air, so there's no compliance with orders. and submission, quote, requires at minimum that a suspect manifest compliance with police orders, unquote. United States versus Washington is another case that was not distinguished. Stopping briefly, then driving away is not submission to authority. That's consistent with Baldwin. United States versus Valentine, another Third Circuit case, and deals with officers who received a tip, stepped out of their vehicle, and approached three men.
Well, then, from your standpoint, really reduced to its essence, where did the district court go wrong? Because, well, the district court said that in the opinion, the court believes a close question is presented as to whether a seizure can occurred, especially given that the plaintiff fled from the scene. And the district court points out about much depends upon the tie-in sequence. And under these circumstances, depending on the timing of these events, the court cannot say as a matter of law that plaintiff was not seized. Was the district court just, with all due respect, just flat wrong in your estimation?
With all due respect, yes, Your Honor. And I believe that a qualified immunity order would set out the facts sufficiently. If there is not a sufficient allegation to the contrary, then that would be the basis for the burden of pleading has not been met by the plaintiff to show that there has been a meaningful stop within the Fourth Amendment. What if the
plaintiff alleges they stopped because the officer put the car in front of him? So the plaintiff alleges, I stopped because the police officer blocked my way, opened the door, knocked down Michael Brown, therefore I stopped. Is that enough?
No, not to allege that he stopped. The stop has to be alleged to submit and within the meaning of the law.
Well, I mean, I stopped because he blocked my way, I stopped. Is that enough?
I would say no, because that's a subjective statement by the pleadings. It would have to
be. That's an objective statement. I stopped, the police car was there, and because the police car is blocking my way, I stopped. That's objective. Not subjective.
I apologize. It is an objective statement. There's an objective reasonableness standard, I would say, with respect to whether there is the Fourth Amendment.
So it was unreasonable for him to stop when a police car blocks his way?
Well, the police car was in the road, so I don't believe that there was any. He, in fact, wasn't stopped because he was able to leave, and there was a 360 environment.
Well, he was able to. Anybody who, if a police officer comes up to you in the middle of the street and pulls their gun and says, stop, you can turn around and run.
Now, that's
you
correct.
You may get shot, but you're not obligated to stop under your theory.
That's correct. If you don't stop and you do run, then there is no seizure if there's no physical touching.
But if you do stop, there is a seizure.
If you do stop and submit to the authority of the police.
Well, and let's say he says, I stopped because the police officer blocked my way.
Yeah.
I stopped.
Understood.
So that's submission to his authority, isn't it?
I respectfully, Your Honor, disagree that just stopping, as in these cases, constitutes immediate submission. There has to be a meaningful stop to comply with the orders or to respond to questioning or to otherwise allow the officer to address that person. Here, as alleged, Darren Wilson was in an altercation with Michael Brown. So there was no ability for Darren Wilson to address Dorian Johnson at all, at least taking the pleadings as true. So that's how I would suggest to the court the difference. I see my time is very short. I wanted to briefly state that there is an issue regarding a failure to intervene, unless there are other questions on the earlier topic. I think qualified immunity is deserved to the defendants regarding a failure to intervene because Thomas Jackson was not present to intervene. There was no allegation Thomas Jackson was present, setting aside the supervisory liability aspect, of course. And obviously, Darren Wilson has no obligation to intervene with himself, so that would require reversal as well. And then finally, this court has jurisdiction. There was no challenge on the response brief to the pendent jurisdiction over the issue of municipal liability, as the issue of whether the law under SABLA, the law was clearly established at the time of what constituted a seizure. That links with qualified immunity. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Very well. We'll hear from counsel for Mr. Johnson. Mr. Williams, good morning. You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. James Williams on behalf of Dorian Johnson. I thank the court for allowing me to proceed pro hoc vice. I'm a lawyer in Louisiana. Your Honors, as the district court correctly points out, in United States versus Johnson, 326 F3rd 1018, articulates the very well-settled principle that You look at the totality of the circumstances in deciding whether or not a seizure has occurred. Judge Malloy, and I'm sorry, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Judge Malloy, I think you articulated it best. If we look at the totality of the circumstances, as pled in our complaint, where we talk about part of that totality are the circumstances that existed in Ferguson, Missouri at the time, if we're going to look at what was going on through the minds and the behavior of Dorian Johnson and Michael Brown. So if we have these two gentlemen walking down the street, we have a police officer in Darren Wilson who, if you take our complaint as true, and we believe our allegations, shouts an expletive to them as they are walking down the street, consistent with a pattern that we have pled in our complaint, uncovered by the Justice Department, consistent with the pattern of the Ferguson Police Department targeting African Americans in situations like this for unwarranted stops and for excessive force during those stops, all of which is pled in our complaint, all of which forms the totality of the circumstances that existed on Canefield that day. As they're walking down the street and this expletive is yelled, Darren Wilson passes them, stops, slams his car in reverse, and this is in the complaint, we say abruptly, slams his car in reverse, reverses it back to where he is in their proximity, blocks their path, doesn't pull back up and say, got a minute, like in one of the other cases, actually restricts them from going, moving forward, and angles his SUV so that he is blocking the roadway that they are walking down. He then opens the car door violently into Michael Brown, hits Michael Brown. Michael Brown, there, the door closes back because of the close proximity. They are, Dorian Johnson and Michael Brown are standing shoulder to shoulder at this point. This is one encounter. Darren Wilson, because Michael Brown is closer, grabs Michael Brown by the throat, and a struggle ensues. When we're talking about a seizure and whether or not they're stopped, this isn't a situation where Darren Wilson says, stop. And they say, uh-oh, police. And they take off. I was a law enforcement officer in a former life. Okay, this is not a situation where the police says, excuse me, gentlemen, can I have a word? They take off running. Or you go to a house and someone backs away until they can try to slip away and evade authorities. They are stopped in Canefield by virtue of this law enforcement officer blocking their path. No reasonable person, and reasonableness is the standard articulated in Johnson and many other cases. And I agree with my opponent that it is an objective test. And what is, I'm sorry, do you have a question?
Let's assume you're right, that under the totality of the circumstances, the blocking the path, the opening the door, grabbing Mr. Brown, that a reasonable person would perceive that as an attempt to stop Michael Johnson or Dorian Johnson.
Yes, sir.
But let's say, but what their argument is, well, it's a two-prong. First, you got to have the stop or the attempted stop.
Yes.
And then secondly, you actually have to stop. If you, as you said, if he had just turned around and ran, it wouldn't have been a stop.
Yes.
So how do you answer their question that the time frame was so brief that this cannot be considered a stop of Dorian Johnson?
I think... And I'm look. My answer is, and I'll find the authority, but they cited also, it is not the brevity of the encounter that is determinative of whether or not it was a seizure. It is the nature of the encounter. So if the officer has a one-hour conversation with the person that is very friendly and amenable and cooperative, perhaps no seizure. If it's a 30-second conversation, but it's done in such a way where no reasonable person thinks they can leave, it's a seizure. And I would thank you. I would suggest to the court that in a situation like this where you have a young man walking in a neighborhood that has been, according to our allegations, and that we've incorporated into our complaint, that has lived under a regime that they lived under, and they know what these stops mean, and they know what the relationship is like with the police, and maybe even if you didn't have that, but you do definitely have that in this case, according to our allegations, which must be accepted as true at this point. So... it's not whether the encounter was long enough. It's whether Dorian Johnson stopped because he was seized, because a police officer blocked the path that he was walking down after shouting in a very aggressive and profane manner to them. So I give this I give this very rude, authoritative command, which I wouldn't give if I wasn't a police officer. No human being just rides down the street, you know, and feels the entitlement to do that. A police officer, using his authority, issues an aggressive, profane command, and then abruptly puts the car in reverse and blocks their path by blocking the entire street, then that's a stop. Now, whether...
I'm waiting to hear the case you can cite that will say that this was clearly established law.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Pardon?
I didn't understand the question.
Where is the clarity? We're talking about immunity here, qualified immunity, and I don't know if you had time to read the Supreme Court's Monday case and the Pollock case in Mexico, where the Supreme Court all basically handed the Tenth Circuit judges their heads and say, can't you read our cases? We've been very cautious about denying qualified immunity. And all emotion aside, I don't know how your case could survive, Paulie.
Well, I think the qualified immunity in this case seems to hinge on whether or not there was a seizure.
That's the whole question, I guess. What case do you have that's anywhere near the facts of this case that would have alerted this officer to say that what I'm doing violates clearly established constitutional law?
Well, I think the Browder case certainly establishes...
Which one is that?
Browder, the...
Okay. I must not have copied that one.
I will get that case here.
Okay, Browder versus...
County of
Indio. Your brief, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
I think that case is more like this case. This is a roadblock situation where you are restricting the path of parties. If you have, if you're restricting the movement under the totality of the circumstances as observed by the district judge, let's keep in mind, Mr. Johnson didn't leave the side of the police officer until the police officer started shooting, started using the excessive. Yes, Judge Malone.
When did the gun come out?
The gun comes out at the car, after the reverse, after the blocking the path, after striking with the door, after grabbing the neck. So they are stuck.
And who grabbed?
Darren Wilson grabbed Michael Brown by the neck.
It was Brown still, I presume, outside the car?
Yes.
And was Darren Wilson inside the car at that point?
Yes.
Okay, and so then what happens, according to your allegations?
Grabs him by the neck. They are at the and doing so in a hurtful way. Michael Brown is trying to get away from this choking, if you will. Dorian Johnson is standing shoulder to shoulder with him, with Darren Wilson saying, "Stop trying to get away. I'm going to pull out my gun if you don't stop." Darren Wilson pulls out his gun. Michael Brown continues to try to free himself. Dorian Johnson standing there shoulder to shoulder with Darren Wilson saying, don't move. Darren Wilson.
So let me stop you right there. Is that in the complaint, him saying where you said, because now don't move is a command. So if you got somebody with a gun out saying don't move, now you're, I think under any of the cases you're talking about, clearly established law that that's a seizure.
Sure.
Assuming that they submit.
You know, it does not, and I'm reading the factual allegations, paragraphs 20 through 30, paragraph 25, Officer Wilson then reached through his window and grabbed Brown, who was closer to Officer Wilson than Plaintiff Johnson. Officer Wilson thereafter threatened to shoot his weapon as Brown struggled to break free. Officer Wilson discharged his weapon twice, striking Brown in the arm. So we do not, and I do point out that this is, you know, notice pleading under federal rules, we do not specifically say, and he said stop. I think it is contained in the allegations of paragraph 25, which is grabs him by the throat, pulls his gun, threatens to shoot. The threaten to shoot being, unless you believe that Darren Wilson is just on a killing spree, the threaten to shoot is, if you don't comply, It is only when shots are fired and Darren Wilson is trying to kill these young men, according to the allegations of the complaint, that Mr. Johnson and Michael Brown both then flee. Not a case where Darren Wilson says, I come upon them, they run, I give chase and shoot. That would arguably be not the seizure that we're talking about, because in any of the cases, if a suspect is fleeing the authorities, it's not a seizure. But this is a case under the facts where there is movement, there is stopping. Oh, I'm sorry, Judge Warren. There's movement by the alleged suspects. There's stoppage of movement based on a command of a police officer and his action in road blocking, like in Brower, whether it's an 18-wheeler or a unit, a marked unit at that. If you are blocking the travel of a citizen in the exercise of your police authority and they stop because you're there next to them, they don't take off when he puts it in reverse. They don't take off when he opens the car door. So they are stopped based on the authority that the police officer has asserted.
Do you agree that if it's ultimately determined there was no seizure, that the rest of the complaint essentially falls?
On those allegations, I think we've made some state law claims of assault and different things.
But all the federal claims rise or fall on the seizure issue, don't they?
Yes. If there is no seizure, then the claims that the district court left remaining, I'm going to look at the ruling.
Supervisory liability. I don't see the failure to intervene as having much legs. But you got the supervisory liability, the
right.
Municipal policy. All those are all predicated upon there being a seizure, as I understand.
I guess I'd have to give I agree with you, the claims against Darren Wilson directly. I'd have to give some thought to whether or not the supervisory liability claims also fall, although I guess they'd be qualified immunity without the seizure.
Well, if there's no constitutional violation, there can't be supervisory liability.
Very true. And I guess the argument would be if there was no seizure, there was no violation of my client's constitutional rights. I would have to agree with that. But I do think, as the district judge found, when we look at the totality, I think it's important that the case law all says every case cited by my opponent is a case where the suspect flees before any sort of stopping. Even the case on the porch when they approach the suspect and the suspect is looking for an opportunity to slip away, all very standard in policing. But in a situation where we know through the Department of Justice report that has been incorporated and alleged in our complaint, we know that there is a pattern of stops with excessive force in the community, and that you have a gentleman like my client living in the community who encounters a police officer in a very similar situation to the one that we have alleged is being carried out by this police department on a consistent basis. You have activity by a police officer to stop them, yelling at them, reversing the car, opening the door, grabbing them by the neck. You want to talk about opportunity to flee? No fleeing at any of these moments. Communicating to all of us that they were seized. If they would have taken any of these opportunities to run, other than when a gun starts going off, at that point, they're preserving their life. This isn't, I'm fleeing from the police give chase, and the police fire. This is, I'm standing there, engaging with the police officer until the police officer starts shooting. And once the police officer is shooting, I then run to save my life. That is not fleeing because I'm not yet seized by the police officer. Otherwise, they would have fled at any point up to that moment.
And do you agree, I think this was your opponent's argument, that it's an objective test both as to the officer and the suspect?
I agree. It does not turn on the subjective belief of the participant. It is what do we can when we as a community, when you as the judges, quite frankly, but when we look at this from the outside, what do we think a reasonable person in those circumstances, under the totality of those circumstances?
And if the police officer says, and the jury believes subjectively, that he didn't intend it to be a seizure, does that make a difference?
No, because the test is objective. So it's not, unlike some other areas of law, attorney malpractice, for example, turns on the existence of an attorney-client relationship, turns on the subjective belief of the client. You know, there's some areas in the law where the subjective belief of the officer or the subjective belief of the participant matters. This doesn't matter. Darren Wilson takes a stand and says all day long, I didn't think I was stopping him. If a fact finder looks at this and says, well, under those circumstances, anyone would believe you were stopping them, including me, including any law enforcement officer, then it's a seizure.
Well, back to the underlying question of qualified immunity, as the Supreme Court again on Monday reminded all of his appellate judges to caution us against defining these levels of constitutional violations at too high a level of generality. That's the key, and that's what we appellate judges have to do, because we don't like to be treated by the Supreme Court as errant children, and that's what, in effect, they did to the Tenth Circuit. So. But we thank you for your argument.
No problem. Thank you, Your Honor, very much.
Your Honors, I have 40 seconds, so I'll be very brief on some points. Counsel challenged that I cited to no case regarding where an individual or suspect stopped in response to a command. Page 19 of my opening brief, I cite to Valentine, where the individual complied with stopping, putting his hands in the air, and then he ran after he stopped. The duration, or the nature, rather, was not significant.
So I guess you're not emphasizing that there was no stop.
He may have hesitated very well. Yes, Judge.
That under objective view, that what Darren Wilson did what constituted a stop. I mean, if you're grabbing somebody by the throat and pulling out your gun, that's a stop.
To that person, yes, Judge.
Well, and the person who's with him probably would be considered a stop as well, right?
Then that depends on the nature of whether he submits to him.
Well, but from an objective standpoint of what the officer did, I think you said from the beginning that there's two components, right?
Yes, Judge.
Did the officer objectively intend to effectuate a stop?
Is there a show of authority, and is there submission to that authority?
Right. So it seems to me grabbing somebody by the throat and pulling your gun, that's a show of authority, right?
That's how plaintiffs would see it, and I would dispute it, but I understand your position, Judge.
But your main argument is that even if Officer Wilson demonstrated authority, attempted to effectuate a stop, it was not effective because Mr. Johnson did not submit.
Exactly. And that's why Brower is distinguished, because that produced a stop. That's why Valentine controls. And that's why, in short, there is no clearly established law or case that suggests an officer who does not exit his vehicle or can otherwise address the individual has effected a seizure.
Well, but I don't get where the clearly established comes in. I mean, it's clearly established you can't effectuate an unconstitutional stop. So right. if we agree that from an objective standpoint that the officer tried to effectuate a stop, that's clearly established. You can't do that. So why does the fact that the guy ran away exonerate the officer from his bad conduct?
Because the officer's intent and what again in Hodari D, an attempt to seize is not a seizure.
But that's clearly established, right?
Hodari, right, correct. An attempt to seizure is
not
a seizure.
So what about this is not clearly established?
Whether an officer who's unable to address whatsoever the suspect that says Dorian Johnson says, I was seized. I stopped because of all of this that was happening. There was no allegation that Darren Wilson even got out of his car, let alone give a command to Dorian Johnson after he parked the car, was able to address him, tell him to stop, ask him any questions or anything.
Isn't the issue, did he effectuate a stop? Once we get past that, I don't see where there's any issue about clearly established.
That's what all these cases say, is just stopping is not a seizure. There's no hesitant pause. That is not a stop within the meanings of the Fourth Amendment. Sure, I can stop in my tracks for a second. All of those cases, many of those cases, people did actually stop. But the stop that's produced has to be meaningful in a sense that they submit to the authorities, I guess, in a significant manner, like Valentine, Washington, Baldwin. I see my time is up, Judge. If you have any other questions, I'm happy to answer them.
We thank both sides for the argument. It's a very important case, and we will take it under consideration and decide it in due course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.